Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, here to help you find success in all areas of your life. The power is in your hands. Join our network for free at besteveryou.com. And now, here's Elizabeth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. I'm so glad you're here with us today. We have a great guest. We have Andrew Hahn. He's the author of The 1 Hour Miracle, a 5-step process to guide your self-healing. And his website is lifecenteredtherapy.com. If you're listening and want to poke your nose around and look at his website while we're chatting here. Andrew, welcome to the Best Ever You Show. I hear we're neighbors.
Yeah, sort of. Well, we're not far from each other. I gather you're in Maine, and I'm on the coast of Massachusetts up in Rockport, so we're not far from each other. I just realized that about 15 minutes ago, which is a cool
thing.
That's
awesome. How long have you been on the East Coast?
My whole life. I've never lived anywhere else except for the East Coast.
That's so awesome. Yeah, we moved here from California in 2004. And then prior to that, I was raised in Iowa, and born in Minnesota, raised in Iowa. So bumping around everywhere. But, yeah, Maine's beautiful. I love it. Has it been kind of a funky winter down there with ice this year, or have you not had what we've had up here?
I don't think we've had as much as you. I think you're just enough further north that you've been a little funkier than we are. But we aspire to it, what can I tell you? So,
we haven't had that postcard snow this year. It's been a lot of ice and rain. So anyway, all right, weather aside, welcome. Thank you for being here with me. This is a cool book. And I almost just want to let you just tell us all about it, but I think I need to just let everybody know first that you're a licensed clinical psychologist and you're the podcast host of Guided Self-Healing, Fearless Living. And Joan, tell me about Joan Beckett. Is she your co-author and co-host, or just co-author, or co-business partner? Or Joan Beckett.
Joni is my co-author, and we run our institute together. And I'm biased. I think Joni is as wise a woman and being as I've ever met. And when you get to run a psycho-spiritual institute, you get to meet a lot of amazing people. And I think Joni is a genius at living, and I think in a different life she would be the president of the United States and be the best president we ever had, probably since George Washington. She's that amazing.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'm very lucky to be able to, you know, share this with her. And I can tell you stories about Joni for the next hour about what I believe she is as a woman who could be one of the most extraordinary leaders in both, you know, spiritual and psychological growth, and the things that she's done and the things that she's been able to handle in her life just make me, I'm lucky.
It's a great word, isn't it? Well, we'll have to have her on separately or have you guys come back on together. I know we were trying to get her, Joan, scheduled for our Women's Day conference, and she couldn't quite make March 8th with us. So we'll circle back and gather her. So tell us about the 1 Hour Miracle. You and I are
co-authors.
I don't even know how to say that. Yeah,
we were co-authors.
Who knows?
I mean, you know, we should explore that.
I just said that, so hey, you never know. But we're published together with the HCI
it
book.
It must be true.
It must be true.
Otherwise,
I love this.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have said it.
Exactly. But I love the topic around this book. So you go for it. Tell us all about the 1 Hour Miracle. And in there, tell us why you wrote the 1 Hour Miracle.
Well, what I'd say is we have developed our own way of working with people in their stuckness, and it doesn't matter what their stuckness is. It could be physical, like chronic pain, or emotional, like depression, or mental, like anxiety, or relational, like bad relationships, or spiritual, like alienation, or for people who are more in your world, that they are leaders, or they are entrepreneurs, or whatever, but something has them stuck, and they know they could do better, but something's blocking them. And basically, we developed a way of very, I think, efficiently and effectively releasing blocks, and then a way of working to help people manifest whatever it is that they truly desire when they're in alignment with life. And that's what this book is about. It's about how we can be in relationship with life in a way that really is honoring of life, and that our role in life is really to be in alignment with life. And then once we're in alignment with life and what life is revealing to us, to live a life that is our desires, which is our aliveness, and be able to do this in a way that we can open to being whatever life invites us into, whether it's something that is ego-enhancing or seemingly not ego-enhancing, because we just won't be so identified with it. And as soon as that happens, we're free. So what we're really, this book is really about how to be free to be whoever you are with nothing stopping you and being able to create it. That's what it's about.
I love it. There's got to be a story somewhere here about you being a former controller, which is an accountant, basically, I think, of a Fortune 100 pharmaceutical.
Joni.
Oh, okay.
Joni was that one. Joni was that when she was in her mid-20s. She was the controller of the international division of Pfizer, I could tell you stories about Joni and how that happened when she was so young, but I need a story there.
Because what makes what I want, I thought it was you, sorry. Now I'm reading it going, I get it. Okay. But what makes someone go from that to this, or was she both all along? That's a jump in career, kind of.
That, well, Joni was very, very fast-tracked at Pfizer. And
right.
Joni, when she got to be in her late 20s, even when she was the controller, and she was up for being promoted even above that, and she did remarkable things there. If you want to just talk about that with, you know, I know you have a lot of women, I'd be very happy just to tell you stories about Joni my whole life. How she went from that was she decided, Joni's a very all-or-nothing person, and she had children, and she said, I have to be fully there. I want to be fully there with them. So she left this really remarkable job, and then, you know,
that
she was a full-time
familiar.
Mom, and then, well, you could tell me, never having, I don't know, did you do that also?
Yeah, I sure did.
Yeah.
I sure did. Yeah, I have four boys. They're 20, 22, 24, and 26 now. So as you're saying that, I'm like, uh-huh, all in. And one or the other, I felt so divided, so divided.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I cannot do both of these at the same time. I'm going to choose one, and I'm going to choose the kids. Because it was, I'm just an all or nothing like that. Yeah, same thing. So interesting.
Yeah.
So then did she ask, I want to tie this all in with you too. Was she already a licensed mental health counselor as well, or did she do that after?
No,
and become
she didn't
that?
Know anything about it at all.
Okay.
Her son was very sick, and she, like you probably, I don't know, do you know the Enneagram at all, Elizabeth, or no?
No. Go ahead.
Well, you may want to learn about the Enneagram someday. It's the best. It's the best framework I know for understanding people from the inside out. Anyway, Joni was a protector and still is a protector, which means that she is highly competent and hierarchical and knows and can pull away, you know, everything and knows what's most important and bigger energy than anyone I've ever met. And, you know, in that way, she may be like you. And so, but anyway, so she was, that was what was going on. And she has a child, and her child had a really, really bad acute chronic illness, and Joni had heard about me because she was her son was the patient of sort of the biggest holistic MD in all of New England, and he actually let go of his practice and came and studied with us because we were getting really remarkable results. And so she came to a talk that he gave, had me give to all, to do over well over 100 of his patients, and she wanted her son to see me, so her son saw me, and then she got very interested in this, and she said, she was very kind, she said, I can put a hole in anything. I can find, if you give me something, I can find out how to make it better. And I couldn't, she had no background in any of this stuff. She said, I couldn't find what was limiting about what you were doing, and I had never found anything like that, so I had to go and study it. So she came and studied with us, and I'll not be crass about this, but we put people into trainings, and she got matched up over and over and over again with a very, very, very senior, very well-known, very highly respected therapist in our area. And she was day one so remarkable. It was she was the best student I ever had and could do things the first day that very few students of ours could do after a year. And so she trained with us and then became certified in this, and she started running trainings with me, and at some point said, I'd like to be your partner. And I said, you know, you're the only person in the world I can really imagine doing that with. And I said, yes. And, you know, that was close to 20 years ago, and we've been running the Institute since. And that's the story. And you know, she made such a contribution to this book. We really were collaborative in it because she is an amazing editor, even though she's also not a writer. And she is remarkable at this work and has taught me things. And students, most professionals, you know, listen to me and say, oh, my God, and they love losing my mind. And she would just say, Andy, some of the things you're saying just, you know, don't make sense logically. And she'd ask me about them, and I'd either have to make sense of them or I'd have to say, you know what? And nobody much challenges me. You know, that's the thing about having a mind of mine like mine. And she did. And she said in the beginning, she said, you know, she said, I thought at first it was I didn't understand things. I said, no, it wasn't that you didn't understand things. It was just that I wasn't clear enough or I hadn't thought about certain things. And I thought about things, I mean, I don't want to be crass about it, but I thought about things that most people in our field have never even, not even thought about, but would think were crazy. But I think that they're unbelievably useful. And so that's how Joni and I came to be writing the book together.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm big into the backstory. And so thank you for that, because I'm like, okay, what's the connection here to that? And I thought it was you. Sorry about that. But that turned out even better. So I appreciate going through that with me. So what's a one-hour miracle? Why can, and how can I really heal myself? Because let me tell you a secret of the show you're on. Let me tell you one thing. So I have life-threatening food allergies, and I am not a real big medication taker, like a, you know, that kind of thing. So this really interests me, and I think this really will have a significant interest in our food allergy community as well. And we have just a lot of people who are looking for
about food allergies.
Yeah, looking for things other than medication.
About food allergies.
Please.
Okay, let me tell you about a story about a food allergy. One of our students he was told he had the worst allergies both to cats and to, he had certain food allergies, and he was told that if he got near a cat, he would go into anaphylactic shock right away and potentially die, and the same thing was in certain foods, okay?
Yep.
So he had tried everything you can imagine, and he wanted to be a student in our course. But the person we were doing it at that time, that was 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, it was at someone's house and the person had a cat, so he said, I can never do the training. So that person had done one weekend with us. He was also not a therapist, but he had done one weekend with us. And we found out that his food allergies was something called a death wish. And the death wish originated in his current lifetime, when he was between ages birth and five. And when our student dropped him into this part of him that was experiencing, I want to die, he started to literally have anaphylactic shock just from saying out loud, I want to die. And our student said, basically, look, you're not eating nuts right now, and there's no cat around, so it can't be that, so you must be remembering something. So, and he was having horrific time breathing. And so he went into he becomes a sensation. Basically what we invite people to do is to choose to become the sensation that's associated with the thing that was the trauma, which simply means something that couldn't be taken in stride and handled and sort of integrated. He comes into it and he starts having this very, very vivid memory of his mother putting a pillow over his head when he was a toddler and trying to kill him. And he had no he had had no particular recollection of this story except that he knew his relationship with his mother was horrific. And he nearly suffocated, and they transformed the story, and it said that his cat allergies were gone, okay? And I can tell you why, secondhand, why he associated cats with his mother. But so he very tentatively comes into the house where the cat is, and he has no reaction. And he very tentatively comes into the house and eventually starts petting the cat and has no reaction. So he says his cat allergies are gone. And it's why he associated cats entirely with his mother and nearly being killed by his mother. Because what's an allergy, basically? So so what is an allergy? An allergy basically is a mistake, a seeming mistake that your immune system makes, where it says basically, the world is a dangerous place and I can't distinguish a friend from a foe. So it's a narrative. Allergies are narratives. And if you can find, so he goes in there and he has, his cat allergy just goes away, okay? But he also had an even more deadly allergy to nuts.
Yeah.
And he's eating a sandwich at the house and he feels something crunch and he says, what's in this? And he's told it's the nuts that he has the biggest allergies to. And he has, of course, his EpiPen with him. He's about to take it out, and he has no allergic reaction. And he also associated that sandwich with his mother, and the whole food allergy went away. All of that was a student who had done 1 weekend of our training, and the whole thing took 20 minutes, and his allergies were just gone.
Wow.
So I know that's a remarkable story. I could tell you other remarkable stories about allergies, because allergies actually, particularly if they're systemic allergies, are a little bit more complicated often because they're layered. But things like this that people have the most horrific allergies to, you can just, they'll just go away. In fact, the end story in our book is a woman who had never done anything, and she was the receptionist in a doctor's office that I was at, and we were just hanging out. And she said, I have to mow the lawn today, and I can't find anywhere else to do it, and I'm going to be, like, having such a bad allergic reaction. So I said to her, well, why don't you tell me what an allergy seems like to you? And she says, you know, she says basically, she was very smart. She said, like, I think an allergy must be something where you're making a mistake. And something seems dangerous, and it may not be, but I think it's dangerous. And I said, okay, why don't you feel that in your body and feel the allergy in your body right now? And she could do that. Her eyes started to water. And I said, just become it. You're going to become that sensation of, you know, you're having a hard time breathing and your eyes are watering. You're like an actress, and you're going to be, your new name is going to be that. And all I want you to do is choose to be that sensation from the inside out, and just, you're going to bear witness to it and hold that. Not all of you is allergic. Your little toe is fine. So this is the one who's allergic is someone whose name is, I can't breathe. I'm having trouble breathing. That's the one who's allergic. It's not you. So you're going to choose to become that one and just ask what it's come to share about the allergies and where it began and what's happening. And she did that. And she said, oh, I know what it is. I'm not going to tell you, but I know what it is. And I said, fine, you don't have to tell me. And then we did a little energetic practice with her because she went into shock. So we did something called emotional freedom technique. I mean, there are a lot of practices, but that's an acupressure technique. And then her allergies went away. I mean, right in the office, she was having a hard time breathing. Suddenly she could breathe really deeply. She said, this is nice, but I don't believe it. So I come back to the office 2 weeks later. She's in the back. She runs out into the front, and she said, it was a miracle. We called it this. She said it was a miracle. She said, like, I mowed the lawn, and I've never been able to do this without, like, being in bed. She said, I had no reaction. I'm telling all my friends. I'm telling my family. I'm telling everybody. So it's a very remarkable thing to understand that your symptoms, like in the case of that man that I told you about, his not being able to breathe was a clue to the thing that happened to him, which is that his mother was trying to suffocate him, right? So the thing that you think is your worst nightmare actually is also an invitation to remembering something that couldn't be handled and integrated. And when you can handle it and integrate it, mysteriously, one of two things happens. The worst symptoms just go away, or it doesn't matter to you anymore because you say in some way they're trying to serve me and help me, you know. So you can say, well, they're still with me. They've never abandoned me, so they're trying to help me with something. It's a whole different way of understanding this stuff. So I could tell you lots of stories about allergies. I mean, allergies are because people you, they say, oh, my God, it's debilitating. And, you know, they're all narratives.
I got them when I was 28 after a pregnancy. It was very interesting.
Well,
so
maybe in another lifetime you died in childbirth and you associated that with pregnancy, so now you're having a hard time breathing. Who knows? I mean, we could find that out in 2 minutes and we could do a session. And I can't guarantee your allergies would go away, but if they started at age 28 around the pregnancy, I'd be shocked if we couldn't do something about it in one or two sessions. But if you want to find out, we can do it together.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. We've got questions from people. They're asking. They're like, you've got a few skeptics on the line with you. What do you say to the skeptics?
I'd say I love skeptics. Hopefully they're just curious. And I'd say be really skeptical and really, really curious. What? I'm sorry.
We don't have trolls. We don't have the trolls. They're just curious and skeptical.
Right. So you say, like, I love skeptics. Try it for yourself and see. But, you know, I'd have to know more what their skepticism is, because if they're skeptical about my story, the people out there will tell the story. The man I'm telling you about goes around telling the story. And the woman who's in the book said, you know, you can use my name. I mean, like, so, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't have enough money to do double-blind studies yet, you know, but... Someday you will, and, you know. Give me your worst allergy cases, and I'm very happy to work with them. And so are my students. So I guess if they're worried about that, that's it. But you know, anything they're skeptical about, I'll find. If people don't believe in other lifetimes, like I work in other lifetimes, if they don't believe in it, I just say, well, think of it as personal mythology or an undreamed dream or something imaginal. It doesn't matter. I only care if it's useful. And
I do.
You know,
oh,
if they
you
don't
just
believe,
brought up a word.
Go ahead.
I love the word dreams. I love the word dreams. You just said dreams. You know what I always want to know?
Yeah.
I'm just being me here. I was asking. Now I'm just asking you a question about something I always think. What are dreams exactly? How does the brain come up with it? Like, what are they? I see things in my dreams. I'm like, I've never seen that before. How do I have such detail and color? And who are you? And what is this place? And the coolest dream.
No, let me ask you something. Do you ever go in and feel it in your body and ask them?
No, I don't. I just am like, okay, that was a dream. That was weird. You know, that I just do that standard kind of like, that was weird.
I think
what
dreams
that?
Are, dreams are like, you know, for your readers who, you know, or listeners who believe in soul, I think dreams, I mean, Jung said dreams are like letters from the soul, and I think that's true. And they're invitations to remember things, and they're invitations, by remembering, I mean, becoming whole again. Right. So the dream is an invitation to become who you truly are. And I would say if you did nothing else, if you just allowed the dream, felt it in your body, brought all your attention to whatever sensations are there and just say, what if you come to share with me? Watch what happens. It's like you'll pen them and they'll say, she actually cares. She's interested. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we'll share with her. And then whatever comes to you when you focus in your body will be an answer that will be useful. That's what I would say briefly.
Do you, like when you're talking, sometimes I'm getting like the chills all over. Why is that? That's the other thing I want to know. Sometimes when people talk, I go head to toe, chills all over. I don't know if chills is the right word, but there's.
I don't know. Why
that?
Don't you just bring all your attention to chills?
I love
ask
it.
Chills. Why would you ask me? If your child, if your son was in the room and he was a toddler, why would you ask me what he's come to share? Why not just ask him? So why don't you bring all your attention to chills right now, like you're going to become chills from the inside out, and say, who are you, or what are you, and what have you come to share with me? And why don't you tell us what it shares?
Pretty something. You know what? I just did it. That's something I do. Actually, I'm like, okay, who's, what are you telling me? Kind of thing. I do that a lot. So do you believe in angels? I have lots of questions for you.
Did you ask for chills why they came?
I did actually, but I'm not. I don't want to tell the answer. But I have a lot of journals and I write a lot of stuff. Yeah. But do you love angels? Do you believe in angels?
Well, let me ask you something. If you've experienced something firsthand, do you know it, so it's not a question of belief, or do you believe it?
Say that again?
I would say, in my experience, I've experienced angels, so I believe they exist for sure. But, like, that's because I've had the experience of it, so I'm lucky.
But you want to elaborate on your experience of it? Because that's cool. I'm so not following the questions that they gave me to ask you. I'm sorry. Do you want to talk?
Questions to ask me?
Yeah, publicists always give a lovely set of questions, and I've asked a couple of them, but such a neat conversation. I love these kinds of conversations sometimes they're considered not mainstream, you know, kind of thing. They kind of push the boundaries and so forth for some people. And I think it's kind of fun. It gets you thinking about all the different things that there might be or that there are. And I just love that because, you know, I'm a person who's, you know, nearly lost my life on a couple of occasions. So I've been resuscitated before and through food allergies and stuff like that. So I believe in lots of different things and it's nice to talk to you. So, and we have, what I'd love to know, let's move off me though a little bit here and let's go back to the book, because the book has a 5-step process to guide you for self-healing. So a person buys your book, what would you like them to do other than read it?
Well, if they did one thing, it would be what I just invited you to do. Whenever there's something that you're traumatized by, and trauma simply is something that can't be handled and integrated. Now, you won't know it, but you'll know it by the symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. Like you'll have an addiction, or you'll have an allergy, or you'll have a bad relationship, or you'll have some fear that, you know, runs your life, or whatever it is. I don't care what it is. Whenever that happens, there's always an associated discomfort. So I would say every discomfort is a living being who's come to share a story. And every time you have any anxiety or judgmentalism or comparison or compulsion or whatever it is, if you really allowed it and scanned your body, you would notice a sensation. All I want to invite people to do, if I gave them one message, it would be choose to become the sensation, like you're an actor choosing to play a role. And then you will no longer unconsciously identify with the sensation. You'll identify with the one who's choosing to be the sensation and then bearing witness and holding whoever it is, whether it's 28-year-old Elizabeth or 2-year-old Elizabeth or Elizabeth in another lifetime who's dying in childbirth or Elizabeth's great-grandmother on her father's side who's dying in childbirth. Or, you know, Elizabeth is someone who's being experimented on by some extraterrestrial, or Elizabeth is an extraterrestrial. Whoever it is, they will reveal who they are and what they've come to share. And if you listen and you just hear their story, if you did nothing else, because the most powerful practice is awareness in a high vibrational field, which just means you're standing there and saying, I can be with you as you are without needing to understand anything or comparing or judging or having any anxiety. I'm just here with you. Just like you are with chills, or just if you have your allergies, and I said, Elizabeth, when you feel the allergies, what do you feel in your body? And you start to say, my throat's closing up. And I'd say, Elizabeth, you're not allergic. Someone whose name is throat closing up is allergic. Give them a little fine. So it can't be you. It's someone whose name is throat closing up. If you want to know the story of the allergies, choose to become throat closing up like an actress, and that's your role in the story. Your name's throat closing up. And then whatever comes to you, whatever comes to you next is no longer Elizabeth. It wasn't Elizabeth in the first place. It was throat closing up all along. So anything you imagine, anything you think, anything you do, anything you say, anything at all is not going to be you. And no matter what, it will be that. So if you say, oh, I don't see anything, That will not be you in 2021 or wherever we are. That would be somebody, you know, from 1842 who's in the darkness and can't see something. So everything is literal. Everything is part of the process, and you can't go wrong. And if you say, I'm not feeling anything, then I would say, where in your body are you feeling? I'm not feeling anything, which is a sensation. Become the sensation of I'm not feeling anything. I've never actually had a person who couldn't tell me where in their body they were feeling I'm not feeling anything. And then become that, because that just means you're numb.
Mm.
And if I wanted to give people a message, it would be find the sensation associated with whatever your problem was, or whenever you have a discomfort, like you have a headache. Before you say, I hate you and I'm going to get rid of you, you know, it takes an awful lot of energy to make you. And you come here and you're with me. You haven't abandoned me. You're still with me. So I could spend a little time and say, who is this guest who's coming to my house, so to speak, as opposed to trying to kick them out? That would be my message, if I had one message.
I love it. What got you into this in the first place? Why? Tell me who you were in when you were 2 or 3 or kindergarten or 10 or 15 or 20 even. Tell me, take us through who you know, how you arrived at this moment in a way, if you can.
All right, well, I will do that. I'll tell you the first thing. You like dreams. So I'm going to tell you, I woke up from a dream when I was 9 years old, I think. Let's say fourth grade, something like that. I was somewhere around that age, because I think it was fourth grade, so that would be what?
Yeah, 9, 10, somewhere around there.
9, 10, somewhere there. I woke up from a dream, and I wrote down this is what I wrote down. I woke up and I wrote this down, okay? It's a dream. It's called Memories. You can stop me wherever you want, but I'll tell you
my history
since you asked. All right, it's called Memories. It goes like this. You remember things forgotten. You dream of tales untold. Your memory reminds you of your childhood days of hope. Now you have your children, and they have children too. And all you have is memories of things you would have liked to do. Words that were never spoken come back to you like then. All the things you would have done, could you do it over again?
When you were 9?
Not the poem. Yeah, I woke up from a dream. So, like you say, well, you know, it's kind of strange. And what I thought at first was that was just a dream about me and my psyche, because, you know, I'm a romantic and I live with, you know, I know regret. But really, it's about the work. You remember things forgotten. Okay, well, let's suppose you were being suffocated. You died in childbirth. If you could remember what you forgot, your allergies may go away. You dream of tales untold. Let's suppose you could find that story. So it was really a dream about, not just about me, but about the work. And then when I was in fifth or sixth grade, my parents had a dinner party, and they had a radio talk show host, the big radio talk show host in our part of the world. And they were all laughing, and I was standing outside, and I was like an inquisitive little kid. So I was like, you know, in fifth grade, I walked in wanting to know what they were all laughing about. And it became very clear to me what they were laughing about. This man had somebody on his radio show. He was an overnight big talk radio person, my father knew. And it was a small dinner party. I think there were like 3 couples, and they're laughing about this thing. And I realized what they're laughing about is this man has had on his radio show someone who believes in ESP, and they're all laughing about that, okay? You know what I said to them? I can't believe this. I had forgotten this. My mother told me. She said, what you said is, and then I remembered, she said, what I said was, if you could see and everybody else was blind, how would you prove to them that you could see? You know what they said?
What?
They said nothing, so I walked out of the room because I knew they didn't know an answer, but they all shut up. They stopped laughing.
Yeah.
And it was like that,
it.
You know.
That's a great thing to say, actually.
Like, yeah, well, it was, you know, when you wind them up, so I'm telling you.
I hope
you.
People
I mean, like,
that.
And I was kind of like
what
that.
You just said.
What, I'm sorry?
No, I said I hope people listening borrow that because it's a great thing to say to shut it down.
Well, it shut them down. But that wasn't my intention. I really wanted to know. I mean, I was just this little kid. I was innocent, you know. I said, like, well, what would you do if you could see and nobody else could see? How would you prove it to them and not have them laugh at you? when you said, "Oh, I know what's going on out there," and they said, "No one can know what's going on out there," but they just they just know something you don't know. So what? What's the big deal? Yeah. I was always kind of like that. It was like, you know, when I was a little kid, when I was like in, you know, first grade, I went to this planetarium show, and I got out of the show and I said, "All I want to know is the answers to all the questions in the universe." I'd forgotten. I'd said that to him. My mother was in a park with toy cars. She said, like, you know, my brother who was three said, "I want to know." It was a story about how you get to the moon. My brother said, "How do you get there?" And that tells you everything you need to know about me and my brother. I mean, you know, but, you know, it was a great story. But I'll tell you, I'll tell you what really changed things. Okay. I'll tell you the story that really changed things. About 3 years after I got done with graduate school, I went to visit a friend who was, and she also was an extraordinary woman. She was the fourth highest woman in the UN, and she was the head of all non-governmental organizations. And we had already had some psychic experiences together, some really, they're fun stories. But, I mean, like, and I mean, I had other fun stories when I was, you know, like I went on a blind date once and I said, "I know who you were. We were married in a past life and you were a witch. And let me tell you where we hid you. We hid you in this like place behind an enormous fireplace, but they found you one day and dragged you out." And she went white as a sheet. And she said, "That was a dream I had my whole life. Childhood." And, you know, we actually went on a few more dates. But the thing that really changed things for me was I went to visit this friend who was, she gave up her job at the UN and she went on to spiritual retreat at the Self-Realization Fellowship in Encinitas, which is Yogananda's ashram, if people know that. If you know, most of us who find this world, they often start with a book called The Autobiography of the Yogi, which I think is, you know, one of the great books of all time, which is Yogananda's book about his life story. But anyway, she went out there and she was part of SRF, Self-Realization Fellowship. And I knew I had to visit her. And the day before I got there, she fell and she hurt herself badly. Like, you know, she clearly had a really bad ankle sprain and it was discolored and it was swollen and she was in really awful pain. But she wanted to show me the fellowship. So, you know, she's sort of leaning on me the whole way. We go off to this fellowship and we do this heart opening chanting service for about an hour and a half. And then she walks me around the fellowship. And this place in Encinitas is like, you know, the closest I've seen to heaven on earth in this country. And we're walking around and we get to these two benches and she said, "You're going to have to carry me out of here. I can't walk another step." She was leaning on me, but she said, "I can't even walk at all." So she sits down on one end of the bench and I want to be able to, you know, put her elevator foot. So I go and have to sit on the other end of the other bench, which meant I had to walk through some bushes to get there. And I sat down. And the second I sat down, I was flooded with light. And I knew it wasn't the sun because I knew where the sun was. I closed my eyes and it was off to the right and the sun was off to the left. So I knew it wasn't the sun, but I could just feel this energy flooding me. And I said to her, "You know, put your ankle up here." And I just started channeling. I didn't touch her. I just started channeling this energy through my hands to her ankle. I did that for about 5 seconds, and she said, "You know I can read auras, don't you?" This is 1991, maybe, 1990. So I was still pretty young at that point, and I said, "Roshan," which is her name. She said, "I'm a nice Jewish boy from Boston. What do I know from auras?" And she said, "Are you aware that there's pure light that's coming down from the crown of your head into the center of your chest and out your hands to my ankle? And you also aware that you sat in this really strange place?" And I said, "Yeah, because I wanted, you know, I had my excuse." She said, "No, it's called the seat of the healing. Nobody sits there." And, you know, but people can sit there. They just, no one ever does. And so she had this experience. Then we look down. It's like 15 seconds later when we've had this conversation. There's no swelling. There's no discoloration. She gets up and she has no pain. She walks out. And I said, sort of like, "We're not in Kansas anymore." And at that point, I said, "I have to find out what the hell's going on here." Pardon my language, but I did. And I spent two years, I didn't know it was, and I went and studied everything you could possibly imagine. And I mean, you know, I did mystery trainings. I did healing by touch trainings. I did sort of depth psychology trainings. I studied psycho-spiritual trainings. I studied the Enneagram. I studied what was called regression therapy, which I don't believe in, which I can tell you about in a second, because I don't think there is such a thing as regression therapy. But, you know, I do something that would be called that, except for the fact that you can already know why I don't think it's regression therapy, because the being is here right now, so why would I have to regress you to find this being when they're here right now as a body sensation? Which, by the way, makes an enormous difference, because if you're not regressing, you don't have to, like, resource you. The only resource is you have to find this other being and just be with them. And then I can
that's
take
good.
You into the most horrific, you know, what?
Oh, that's a great, I'm glad. Thank you for that, because I always wondered about that. And it's like, oh, there's a breath of fresh air. Keep going. Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well,
I just was like, yahoo, you know, kind of thing.
Well,
you got a cheer from
that's
me.
That's cool. Wow. Anyway, so I said all this stuff. And then 2 years later, I have an acquaintance. And she says, you have to go see this woman. She's doing miracles in New Jersey. And I said, well, I can open the miracles anywhere. So it turned out that that woman, whose name was Judith, who didn't live in New Jersey, she lived 10 miles from me in Massachusetts. And the story I was told was this. A woman came to this workshop she was running, and she had such a bad case of asthma she could barely walk up the stairs, right? And Judith does a session with her using something called applied kinesiology, also muscle testing, which I had never heard of in 1990, and probably many of your guests haven't heard of, although it's a real gift from the gods. And so
what's
the muscle testing tells, it's called applied kinesiology or muscle testing.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
kinesiology,
testing?
Yep, I love that, yep.
Yeah. Well, I think muscle testing is just a way of accessing soul, basically. I mean, I don't think of it the way most people think of it, because I think we're just asking the body be a means of communication with soul, and then it does. And I think that's what happens. But you can then ask anything you want in the service of healing and growth. But anyway, she's using muscle testing, and she finds this story that my friend says she found, helped this woman find. The woman finds the story while she's tapping all over her body. And then it says, you know, she muscle tests, and it says, in a language I don't use anymore, I don't use clear, but it said it was cleared. And Judith, who is a very strong personality, said to the woman, why don't you go outside and start to walk and see if you feel different. So she goes outside, she starts to walk, then she starts to run. She comes back, she's totally winded, and she said, that's not a big surprise, because I haven't been able to run a step in 7 years. I said, that's an interesting story. I didn't have anything in my repertoire at the time that would account for that, and I was a trained psychologist, and Judith didn't anything about psychology, because she was a neurobiologist who had studied NLP and then had studied the beginning of acupressure with Cal Ann. It's your friend,
yeah.
If your colleagues know, you know, all of the tapping stuff, which started as thought field therapy and then became emotional freedom technique. And Judith had done her own original research on trauma. And I was the first person who trained with Judith, who was a doctoral, you know, I had a doctorate in clinical psych. She was just starting out, and she taught me what she knew, and I knew an awful lot of stuff about depth psychology and patterns and everything you can imagine. And we worked together for a while, and then we went our separate ways, because Judith is much more oriented towards the material world, you know, and sort of that way of being. And I'm a soul psychologist, so our worldview didn't exactly line up, so.
Yeah.
It was okay. And so that was 25 years ago. And then I started doing something which at the time we called guided self-healing, and now we call life-centered therapy. But our training for people who don't want to learn how to do it for other people is still called guided self-healing. And that was beginning of things, you know. And I've been training people in this for 25 years now.
You know what I appreciate about
people all over the world.
Yeah, I appreciate that you well, when you're trying to learn something, sometimes it's really helpful when somebody says, I do believe in that and I don't believe in that. I do like that and I don't like that. And it has credibility to it. And it helps you focus on, if you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of the same. I believe in that. I don't believe in that. I do believe in that. I don't believe in that, you know, kind of thing. And we match up, and it's kind of interesting. And sometimes I have people on, I'm like, I don't know. And other times I'm like, yep. And this is a yep. So it's cool.
Well, that's cool. Well, I'll tell you, I believe in everything. That
makes
sense. I
hang on 1 second. So for everybody listening, we are going to cut out live, but we're in record mode. You can easily call in at 646-787-8537 and join us. We are not going to cut off. We're just going to keep recording here for a little bit, because it's a really interesting conversation. If Dr. Han has time, I'll ask him in a second. And then you can catch the show on replay. And, of course, the show replays anyway. So do you have time to stick around with us for a little bit longer, like 15 minutes or 10 minutes?
I do. I have 15 minutes.
perfect. Thank you for that.
And we can continue if you like. I'm having a great time too. And if I like doing something, I'll keep doing it. And then talking to you is a joy.
Yeah, I love this conversation. It's open-minded and growth and helpful to people who, you know, there's a lot of people who do feel stuck and they're like, well, you know, nothing's working. Well, so here's another. I want to hesitate before I say this because I don't know if it's right or wrong, so I'm just going to say it. But sometimes people call things like this alternative modalities or alternative healing. Is that still the right word?
If it works for you, it's the right word.
Yeah, okay.
There's no right word. It just is. It's healing, you know. It's what's healing. It's becoming whole.
Yeah.
So,
about 10 years ago.
Becoming whole, I guess. Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, about 10 years ago, I started just searching for things that would work. And for me, like acupuncture is huge in my land. Acupressure, my body responds to that, where sometimes people go, ugh, that doesn't work for me. And it's like, okay, well, it works for me. So I don't know what to tell you. You know, I'll have my ears tacked for allergies, or I'll go in and just really interesting acupuncture, acupressure. It's brilliant for me. But aside from that,
Because one of three things happens when you're traumatized. And one of the three things that happens is you're a flow of energy and the flow stops. It's like you're a deer in headlights. People can feel it. They freeze. Okay, well, what's freezing mean? It means there's a flow of energy that stops flowing. What is acupuncture or acupressure? It's something that starts the flow again. And it's demonstrable, and you can demonstrate it scientifically. So it's like, you know, people just need a way of saying, how can I make some sense of this that makes sense to me? So you just find a way to make sense of it, and then it makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
So I can explain to people, I'll find their language, and I'll say, this is why it might work. But you can check it for yourself. If it doesn't work for you, I mean, you know, there are all kinds of different ways to go in, and you have to find the one that is the best key that unlocks whatever your stuckness is.
Love it.
You know, if all you know is acupuncture, you'll do acupuncture. If you know a lot of things, you'll say, I don't know what's best for you, but your soul probably does, so we could ask them and try it.
Love it. I believe we meet
then
people
we
for
become,
a reason.
Life is the expert, and, you know, and then the person who's receiving the healing, you know, knows what works for them. And my job is, I'm not an expert in anything except for a framework and a lot of practices. And, like, you know, I'll say, you know, life will reveal itself through you, and then I'm here in this place to try to understand, but I'm not the expert in your life. You are. So.
Well, anyway. I like mileage. You know, I love it when people aren't the smartest person in the room, or, you know, between the two of us, there's many people smarter but what I like is your experiences though, and your mileage, and you've got stories to share and you've seen it before and stuff like that. That's cool. Do you believe we meet people for a reason? Not saying
sure.
We meet people for a reason.
Yeah, because I believe that there's a much larger meaning and purpose in life, and I think all of it's part of that. So I just totally believe we meet people for a reason, which
what
is
do you think
that
about...
we're trying to help each other. Go ahead.
Patterns go with that for me. Why working with patterns, and what do you mean by patterns? What does that mean, working with patterns?
Patterns are universal stories, you know, that are mythic. So, like, the most famous pattern is called the Oedipal, right? Well, what's the Oedipal? The Oedipal complex, Freud. He says there's one major pattern. Well, there is a pattern. What's that story in a nutshell? You have a forbidden wish, right? And it's a forbidden wish, and you're going to be punished for it by someone who's bigger than you and knows and more powerful than you, and they're going to harm you because of your forbidden wish. So you have to deny the wish and find a way to identify with that more powerful person. Well, that is a pattern. I mean, it's just not the only pattern. He thought it was because that was the foundation of his particular personality structure. But there are all kinds of patterns that are around neglect or betrayal or there are patterns we call wonderful patterns, because you can have traumas where things are too good. And if your life is sort of gray and then you have one moment when everything is so much better, it's like a trauma, except for the fact that instead of trying to get away from something, you crave it. And so, but you keep trying to reenact the past in order to have that experience or to master that experience. So there are, we have three categories of these patterns. The first is ones that affect one center. So what are your three centers? Your head, your heart, your belly. What's the head? The head's about beliefs. So if you're in the trauma of the head, you just believe something that you know on a deeper level isn't true. And it's because of a narrative. One of the, what's the heart? The heart says basically when your heart's lined up, you know, what you feel is what you're experiencing in the moment, and you're a choice about expression. When you've had a trauma to the heart, you won't let yourself feel some feeling, right? You will either deny it or displace it or change it into something else. And you're not a choice about expression. What's the belly? It's about boundaries. When you have no trauma to the belly around whatever the content is, it just means you're the captain of your own ship. You get to choose what comes in and what goes out. Your boundaries are permeable. You have a choice. Then there are, there are these universal themes. We call them triple center or major energetic patterns. And there are themes like neglect or betrayal or power or whatever that are universal stories. They're mythic, and you hear them over and over and over again. And, like, you know, those stories carry so many things about things you believe, traumas around beliefs and feelings and boundaries all around the theme. And when you transform the theme, you can change like hundreds of things all at once because they're all enfolded into that one narrative around that universal theme. And they come in material realms, which means they're stories you experience through your five senses, and they come in the non-material realms. The non-material realm stories are stories that are, they are sort of, you know, stories that are not in what we call mutually agreed upon Western reality. They're stories of entities or ghosts or curses or energies that take you over or, you know, extraterrestrials and traumas around extraterrestrials. And I don't care what people believe in them, but, like, you know, if you have tinnitus that nothing's touching and you find out that it's an extraterrestrial implant story, whether you believe in it or not doesn't matter, but you feel it in your body, you can feel the dense energy, and suddenly this narrative comes to you where you're, you know, not wanting to hear something, you put out a prayer to the universe to not have to hear it, and suddenly you see this weird being putting a rod into your ear, and your ear starts to buzz, you can't hear it, and then you said, could you please, like, melt that thing, and they melt it, and suddenly your tinnitus goes away. I don't think you'll care whether it literally was true or not. You'll just be very happy there isn't the ringing in your ears, right?
True.
So
yeah.
We're just looking for the most elegant story, and they may be stories you'd say, I don't believe in them, at which point I'd say, who cares? Like, you know, you don't have to think they're literally true or not. We just want to know if they're useful. Or there's whole other stories where the problem is not the trauma, but the way you protect yourself, you know, and make sure you never experience it again, but that limits you very much, right? So, you know, in our book, we have a story of a young man who has major depression, and everyone thought it's biological. And we found out that his depression was, in fact, not the problem, but a protection, which he thought was crazy. We found it in his body. When I said, well, what does depression feel like? He said, heavy white oatmeal. I said, well, you're going to become heavy white oatmeal. He becomes that. He suddenly had a very immediate, vivid experience of being a very young boy, making a special gift for his father. And his father basically pushes him away and walks out, and he watches his father leave, and he said, I don't care. Well, I don't care is a childlike precursor to a major depression, which just means I won't let myself feel anything. So we transformed that. I said, well, you can make a different choice. You can just take heavyweight oatmeal out and say, thank you very much, but I don't need you anymore, and I'm going to bring you outside of me and just channel light into you until you are transformed and the me that chose you to come in is transformed. And then we're going to find the real you underneath it, which we did. And we found his truer self that had been hiding behind that because it never wanted to come out again because that creative self was so annihilated by what happened with his father. But as soon as we transformed that, it just he just came out and he was happy as a clam. Then he said, well, why did I get depressives here? There was no precipitant. I said, it's easy. Recreate heavy wet oatmeal. He recreates it. He says, oh, my God, I know what happened. He said, did it ever occur to me? He was now, he was in college, and he was the head of an improv troupe. He goes to his father, who's remarried, and says, Dad, I'd love you to come to my opening night. And Dad says, I can't do it, son. I'm so sorry, because he had remarried, and they had two little toddlers, and he had made an agreement with his wife that they wouldn't go do anything. So he said, I can't come. He says, Dad, that doesn't matter. I don't care. The next day he goes into a major depression. Well, he had no precipitant. It didn't even occur to him. Then he says, okay, smarty pants. He came to my, he said, this is biological. The same thing happened every year. I said, apparently not. but why don't you, he said, what happened the year before that? He went to my opening night. So, like, what's the story? I said, I don't know. Ask Heavyweight Oatmeal. He recreates Heavyweight Oatmeal. This big smile gets on his face. He says, oh, I know what happened. It's Christmas time again. He makes a special gift for his girlfriend, and he gives her the gift. He wasn't aware of any of this because it was all subliminal. He gives her the gift. He sees that she's putting on a fake smile and not really receiving his gift. He says to himself, all of this was unconscious. I don't care. Next day, he goes into a major depression. No precipitant. Of course, there was.
Right.
And then we went away. It went away in 20 minutes and went off and, you know, and I could tell you story after story like this. It's like amazing. Which is the, and they're miracles because you're free. But the real freedom is like you get to like live who you really are. That's the freedom.
Yeah. It's the best ever you moment.
Exactly.
What about somebody like me who doesn't have trauma in her life? For example, like I don't have a, like, and I don't mean like a like the things that you normally say, like people say is trauma, like sexual abuse or this or that. Like I don't have, like I can't go back and tell you, I had a pretty marvelous childhood and so forth. So what would, tell us about that. Like we're getting this question, not just from me, but a couple other people who don't have trauma.
The first
like
thing I
trauma.
Say, what is trauma?
Yeah, exactly.
Trauma?
That's
we're
where I was hoping you'd go
it.
With it. What's trauma?
Trauma is simply something that you can't take in stride, handle, and integrate. And as soon as that happens, you get stuck in that moment.
Got it.
And I don't care if it's horrific, you know, ritual sexual abuse or a really loving parent one day looks at you funny and screams at you and you're not ready for it.
Right.
Doesn't matter. They're both trauma. As soon as you, and if you could handle everything, you would be free, at which point you would be what's called the Buddha or Kuan Yin or Christ or whatever, because you could just say yes to everything. But as soon as you can't just say, yes, I can accept it, you have a trauma. But I don't think most trauma starts in this lifetime. I mean, this lifetime counts, but a lot of us have had other lifetimes and we have families, you know, bloodlines and everything. You know, we had a woman who like, you know, she said, nothing makes sense to me, but I have a major depression. I can't be in front of crowds. You know, her history was fine, you know, and she had chronic neck pain, which she thought was because of a whiplash accident. And we found that all of that was a death that happened in revolutionary France. We found it was a death wish. And when she had, she didn't even tell us about the neck pain and the whiplash. She drops into it and she starts violently wrenching her neck and saying, oh my God, there's a guillotine coming down in my head. Right. And she's has a major depression. Well, she's weighed down. She's helpless. She's hopeless. She can't move. That's how she describes a depression. But literally a narrative where she's weighed down, helpless, hopeless, and can't move and can only wrench her neck away from things. So that's why her whiplash was an unconscious reenactment, a reliving that her unconscious co-created, because we do create what we need in order to heal and grow. So we get echoes of it. And like, you may not think you're traumatized, and no one in this lifetime isn't traumatized. It's just a question of whether you can handle it or not. And it may not be something dramatic, but, you
yeah.
know, it doesn't
no, it
matter
makes
whether
better
it's
sense.
Dramatic or not.
Good, yeah, and I'm glad people are asking that. About three people asked the same question, so I appreciate that explanation for it. It makes better sense to me because I think people are thinking of, like, trauma, like something really dramatic happened. And I love that explanation because it doesn't have to be so awful or anything like that. The other thing people do is they like to compare their trauma to other people, like, oh, mine isn't that bad. And so I like the way you said that. It's really anything that makes you feel a certain way or right?
Anything you can't handle. And comparing things, I've learned a long time ago that comparison only leads to suffering. Comparison comes out of trauma, actually. As soon as you're comparing, you're not sitting with what is. You're comparing yourself to somebody else. You, what you experience is what you experience. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. So with a couple more minutes left, is there anything we haven't talked about? Of course, there's a ton of stuff we haven't talked about, but just to kind of close us out for the show, because we're right at about an hour, what would you like to add, or what's something I didn't ask you, or what's something you want to tell our listeners, anything?
What I want to say is, you know, life is becoming free, and freedom is just being able to face things that you didn't feel like you could face. and just to face them for a moment. And it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, some trauma when you're 3 years old or like, you know, some sense of limitation you have that, you know, knocks on your door every night and says you think you're free, you're unlovable or you're unworthy or whatever. And instead of trying to not feel it by, you know, proving that you're worthy or proving, getting people to do it or drinking or, you know, whatever you're doing, what would happen if you just said for one moment, okay, I'm going to fully allow I'm unworthy and not try to get away from it, but just allow it. And amazingly what happens when you do that is, if you can do that, it transforms into something else like humility or freedom or whatever it is, so that, you know, you're free not to say, I need someone to, I need to prove to people that I'm worthy, or I need them to tell me or whatever. You just say, and then they can say anything they want to you. They can say you're unworthy and say, tell me something I don't know. And I'm also worthy now. Let's go and have some coffee. You know, it's like you're shooting for a place where you're just like creative and non-reactive. And that's what I'd say real help is to say, I can just be with whatever is. That's what I want to say.
Love it. What a joy it is to speak with you. How wonderful to have come across you in this lifetime. I'm very grateful for this hour. Very grateful for you. And when you have conversations like this, it feels odd to say, and buy my book, you know, kind of thing, because the conversation is so much more than the book in a way. What I like is that when people do buy your book, they'll have a part of you with them all the time. I love your book. It's a really beautiful book. And so far I only have the ebook that I've read, but it's beautiful. So was it hard for you to write, or did it just flow? That's my last question I want to ask you.
Hard for us to write and it just flowed. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. I haven't written one myself. I get
both
it.
Both are very true.
Yeah. So your book is called The 1 Hour Miracle, a 5-step process to guide your self-healing. People can go to lifecenteredtherapy.com to learn more about you and the books there as well. Amazon is a great place to buy the book. It is released March 15th of this year. The publisher is HCI, whom we're incredibly grateful to and for. And Dr. Han, it has Andy, I think. Is it like Andrew or Andy?
Andy,
yeah, I heard you a couple times. So I'm so grateful to know you, and I hope you'll come back on the Best Ever You show. And I hope maybe you'll even think about maybe writing something for our website here and there if you want to. I think this is so valuable for people. So I am a human being who does not ever like to end my shows. So until we meet again. I think that's a great thing. But if you listen back to my shows, every one of them is like fumbling at the end going, I don't really want to leave, like a kid. But anyway, we do have to go, and I'm very grateful. And best of luck and success and everything with your book. But more so, what I love is that it's going to change lives, touch lives. And I believe that you're one of those people like me, who when they encounter people with a sense of grace, elegance, compassion, kindness, and collaboration. And I can hear it in your voice. And so thank you for showing us all of your great wisdom. It's been absolutely wonderful. And Joan's lucky.
Well, I'm lucky. And believe me, we're both lucky. And what I'd say is I appreciate what you say about me. I feel the same about you. And the other thing, of course, is I'm just a guy too, and you fortunately or unfortunately don't have to live with me. So, you know, it's like, you know, I figured. So anyway, it's been a joy. I'd love to come back anytime you want me, and I'd be very happy to write for your show. And yeah.
Perfect. Totally. All right, everybody. Okay. Thanks for listening. Let's show Andy some love here with his book. That's what we're all about here at the Best Ever You show. You guys know that we don't do advertising or anything like that. We have many millions of downloads, and we've just, that's your thing. You guys embrace our guests. You buy their books. You listen to their podcasts. You visit their websites, all that great stuff. So here we go, Best Ever You Network. Let's go. Show Andy some love. And again, it's called The 1 Hour Miracle, a 5-step process to guide your self-healing. And there's lots of great wisdom in the book. So thank you, Andy. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And have a Best Ever You day. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening. We're so glad you tuned in. Be brave, be bold, be you, and remember to visit us at besteveryou.com.